Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings podcast, where today we're joined by Scott Kites. Again, is joining us again on the podcast. I think, Scott, this is your third time. Of course, Scott is from Corsale PLC. Welcome on again, Scott. How are you?
Delighted to be here, guys. Thank you. Yeah, I think it's number three or four now.
So number three
becoming,
or four.
Becoming a bit of a veteran.
Indeed. I always like having you on because your sound quality is sounding lovely with your, you know, you've got a good setup technically. So
We have put a little work into our work from home, audio and video layout. But today we'll do the audio.
Side, yeah, indeed. Yeah. Kenny, you're here as well on in the background.
Yeah, I'm just laughing away, Scott, because I know you've got a good setup for recording podcasts. I think I've got a $9.99 set of headphones for Amazon and a $29.99 microphone for Amazon. I do have a dearer microphone, still brand new in its box, Mark. I think it was about £80-90 one that you recommended, but I've never actually got round to unpacking it. But
Well, my only comment is that YouTube and these sorts of things have brought the cost of these sorts of things way down. I mean, it used to be that you'd have to go get a real dedicated setup, it cost a fortune. But with work from home and frankly, the rise of YouTube, you can get some pretty decent quality without spending a fortune. So my take is, you know, if we're gonna transmit our message here today, let's do it loud and clear.
Yeah, indeed. Well, there's a few things we want to catch up on, but as we were talking about just before we sort of started recording was, of course, the broader market. I wonder if we maybe start with that and get some thoughts from everyone on that, because certainly from where I'm sort of standing and watching, it's pretty boring on the stock market. And I wasn't sure whether it was the small cap side of it or London in general. I mean, I did a podcast with someone in New York the other day, and he told me that it's booming over there, and he said it almost feels like, you know, what people are saying, it can never go down. It's those kind of vibes again, where you expect a bit of a, you know, it's different this time, but a crash is just around the corner. But I don't feel it in London, and I think crypto is probably stealing a lot of the liquidity out of the markets at the moment. But what do you think, Scott, from your point of view, both from Corsale and you have to keep your eye on the market, what do you think's going on?
Yeah, I do follow the crypto space pretty closely personally. I have for some time, and yeah, I agree. I think Shiba Inu and the rise of some of these altcoins has really pulling some of the liquidity out of the market. You know, we do talk to guys in New York as well, and you're 100% correct. I mean, the market is booming over there, and sadly, people are getting better valuations for the same for the same sort of quality of assets and companies. So, you know, what we can do that, I don't know. I mean, I think the UK as part of its Brexit efforts has really been trying to differentiate these markets and make them kind of a unique bastion of capitalism here, you know, north of the continent. And so I think, you know, our hope is to be supportive as we can of these plans and hope that liquidity kind of comes back and we start to get some buoyancy here. Yeah. But I agree with you. I think broadly at the moment, it's tricky. It seems like most of my watch list, which is a bunch of natural resource companies in this space, are bouncing off their 52-week lows. Mm. And, you know, that's obviously a little frustrating when people feel like they're executing on their strategy. And frankly, you know, there are some exciting investments out there at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, you just mentioned that there, the 52-week low. I mean, I've been in this game long enough. I'm sure you have as well, Scott and Mark. You're getting there. You know, that's when you see the opportunities. You know, it wasn't that long ago when the market cap, you never seen a market cap below £5 million for any AIM company. And all of a sudden now there's a whole suite of companies that have dipped below $5 million, and I'm seeing a couple of companies that are $2 million, and you're scratching your head saying that was at $10 million, you know, at the beginning of the year. So there's definitely, you know, every cloud, to pen a phrase, there's a silver lining, there's opportunities out there, but it's whether people want to put the money back into the market. And I hold my hands up. I've taken a reasonable chunk out of the stock market and put it into crypto. And we had that conversation today, Mark, in the office, that what's your best ever return?
Yeah, in exactly. Investment? Yeah, and it was a crypto coin. Yeah.
No, I think you and an awful lot of people are saying that. I mean, they're saying, why not take the quick gains while they're available? Crypto's going to, and we all know it's going to have another crypto winter. I mean, I'm personally excited about the space, but it's not going to be like this forever. And I think you're right that these UK entities, and I think it's all the way up to the main market, offer some really good value relative to some of these other exchanges. And I do think it's a matter of time before investors more broadly see that. And I think money will flow back to London.
Yeah. So it's when you see companies with more cash in their market cap, you know, that's when you know you've almost hit rock bottom in the markets. There's some, especially when you go further up into some of these companies that are, you know, maybe 30, 40 million market cap, and they've got more in cash, and you're like, what is going on there? But there's just no love for them, and the market makers are terrible. If they can see an opportunity, they will pull it down.
And so mark it down, and the Bloombergs of the world out there running, you know, UK underperformance. They're talking about the large caps, but it's the same, right? I mean, it's just the UK broadly is just underperformed for whatever reason.
Yeah, it's strange though, isn't it, that like London's just underperforming compared to the other markets. It can't back. Can't just blame it on Brexit. I can't believe that's the reason, really. I can't put my finger on why it would be lagging behind the other markets. Maybe it'll just filter down. I don't know.
No. But like I said earlier, I'd like to see, you know, the UK regulators embrace things like crypto a little bit more. I mean, I think the whole point of leaving the EU is to be able to differentiate, to be able to take more risk. AIM should be in that space. I mean, AIM should not be trying to protect people so much as being cutting edge. I mean, it should be the NASDAQ of London, right? And it just hasn't quite played that way of late. But I have hope that post-Brexit we'll see more of that.
I mean, I've said several times in various different directors that I think the London market, especially when it comes to news releases and media, they're so far behind like Australia. So you look at an ASX news release and, you know, it's colourful, it's got maps, it's got information, you know, it's interactive, it's engaging. And then you look at the prehistoric stuff that comes out from the LSE.
No, that's right. And all limited by the system, right? I mean, you can't upload. I mean, we're very limited by what we can upload on those things. And it just does not allow a lot of creativity and a lot of expression, as you note. I mean, these systems have to be upgraded. I mean, I think Acquias, not to diverge too much, but I mean, it's even worse in a sense. I mean, that should be the most tech savvy. That should be the one that, you know, millennials are trading on their phones, right? Yeah. And it's just not the case. It just isn't the case. And I do not understand it. I don't understand what the niche is there that they're trying to fill.
I think the KYC for crypto as well is so easy. I mean, as you say, you do it all on your phone, and you can have an exchange account open in a matter of minutes. And you know, you go to one of these bespoke brokers, and it's not the broker's fault. You know, they've got to. You've got like five application forms to open a broker account, and then you've got various phone calls, and you know, the whole process can take 2 or 3 weeks. As to opposed to, you can write, you know what, I'm just going to open a Binance account, and we'll have it done and dusted in, you know, an hour or whatever. It's an easy option, isn't it?
It is, and it extends into moving money and paying bills and other things. I mean, once you start to use some of that crypto infrastructure and see that it's 24/7 and that you can send, you know, funds to people, you know, like you said, from your phone while you're at dinner, it really starts to make the traditional finance system look a bit ridiculous to be in 2021.
Yeah, definitely. But of course, to make all this technology work, we still need commodities.
Right. And as inflation is coming into the world, I think that gets into kind of where we're at. I mean, we're going to decarbonize, right? And we need commodities to build the batteries that are required for decarbonization. And I think, you know, that's where Corcel has been trying to position itself over the last couple of years. And we maintain, I mean, we're not thrilled with our share price at the moment any more than anybody else is, but we maintain that our strategy is spot on. I mean, I think our exposure to both the sort of battery metals in the ground, as well as these transitional energy assets here in the UK, is excellent. I mean, it's exactly where we want to be. And so, you know, our plan here is to continue with that. And we believe that, you know, it will prove itself correct over time.
Yeah, no, it's exactly where you want to be. I mean, I hosted a fireside chat the other week, which will be coming out soon on Stockbox with companies who are in the battery metal space. We talked about manganese, lithium, and nickel. I mentioned about the sort of the mining supercycle, which, you know, happened before and was spoken about recently as well. But what do you guys think of the next mining supercycle? And the actual consensus was that supercycle phase was really driven by China and China's industrialization and growth. And that actually the next thing actually won't necessarily be a mining supercycle. It will be more like a supercycle in battery and EV commodities, exactly what Corcel are in, because we're going to see a huge shift in valuations of those commodities over the next, well, as early as next year, really, we'll start to see it happening for the next sort of 10 plus years. Because, as you say, decarbonisation, the rise of the electric vehicle, it's really going to drive the prices of those commodities. And part of the discussion was that actually there's going to be a real chronic shortage, and manufacturers are terrified of not being able to secure their supply chain. So don't necessarily care about the cost or the jurisdiction. it's security of supply for these raw materials to meet the demand. And I don't think the equity markets have caught up really on the realization of how short the industrial market is. So Corcel, of course, are right in the right place with that, with, of course, the things that, that you're involved in, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly right. And getting into them before that, you know, those prices have been recognized, right? I mean, if you look at what we've done over the last year on the mining side, we've got our Mombare project, right? I mean, we've gotten the environmental permit, we've had the warden's hearing. And now if you go to the website, the PNG Mining Cadastre, it says application passed, application MAC matter. And the MAC is the Mining Advisory Council, which is the last step in the mining lease process. You know, so that process is moving forward. I mean, I know, again, there's been some frustrations. We hear people, you know, when are you going to get your mining lease? But we've pushed these forward. During some fairly difficult times. In fact, our partner BMA, Battery Metals, is actually out in Port Moresby right now for a week of meetings working on, you know, finally able to get back into the country. So things have gone well. And on the side of that, we've picked up Wowo Gap, which is a second nickel project of similar size for basically nothing, right? So 2 years from now, you're not going to be able to, you know, pay basically very well for the very little that we paid for that project in cash and shares. And so, you know, our plan here was to position into these things before they get hot. I mean, obviously, we wanted to get hot soon, but I mean, I think you said it correctly. Nickel prices have been on the rise, and they're probably only going to go higher, as well as cobalt. And so, you know, again, I think our positioning is good. We've gotten into them at good low entry prices. I mean, Mombare has been around for a while, and Wowo has been a very cheap point of entry. So yeah, I think we feel our positioning is pretty good. I mean, we've got some work left to do on both. As I said, I think Mombare is actually pretty close to, we can't really put a date on it, but it looks like the mining lease is not necessarily that far away. Mm-hmm. And on Wowo, you know, we've just picked up the project. We're spending time kind of getting our hands around it. We've hired a team lead effectively in Perth. We're looking at kind of what we inherited and putting plans together to take that forward, really to follow the Mombare lead so that we should be exposed to two really large critical metal companies over the, you know, over the coming years.
Yep. And of course, see, the chemistries in the EV batteries are shifting all the time as well. I mean, I think just from my limited knowledge, the chemistries seem to be shifting towards nickel and manganese heavy. So, I mean, that can only be good for you guys as well.
Correct. It's the density, right? I mean, the nickel's key to the density and really giving people the range and or if you're talking about your phone, the sort of number of hours before you have to charge. So you're exactly spot on. The nickel seems to be playing yet a bigger role there. And so, you know, we think our positioning there is excellent. And again, this is the strategy we've outlined. We said we were going to expand that part of the portfolio. I mean, Wowo took a little bit of time. I mean, COVID was a bit tricky. And frankly, RMI, the company we bought it from, you know, had to go through its own process. But we got it done. I mean, we executed exactly what we said we were going to do, which is to double the size of the nickel cobalt resource. And now we're driving both those projects forward. Yeah. I mean, we had talked about broadly looking at new projects, and we have looked at many. You know, I mean, obviously there's a gap there in lithium and some other things. But all I can say to that is, you know, some of these things are already very hot and very expensive, right? And so, you know, we looked at one company, for example, that's it later listed, and they were trying to value themselves at double what their current market cap is, right? So we're sitting here being listed, saying here's what we're worth with our nickel assets, and this company's not listed, it's private, and it's saying we're worth X, and currently it's trading at half of X. You know what I mean? Which isn't to say it's trading at a low number. It's just saying that, you know, people in this space are really valuing a bunch of what is occasionally moose pasture very highly. And so it does not make it easy to go into new projects without paying an arm and a leg. And I think, you know, we want to be reasonable. I think that's where Wowo Gap certainly shines, is because we did get in at a very cheap low point of entry. And when that pays off, it's going to pay off in a huge way relative to our cost basis. Mm-hmm. But to go in and, you know, and dilute shareholders to sort of get into something just because, you know, we didn't think that makes sense. And so we've passed on a number of plays that we've looked at that have been in the space. But broadly, you know, I think we're on target with that. I think we've advanced what we've said we're going to do on the mining side, and we are open to new projects. And you know, when the right one comes along, we will certainly slot it in accordingly.
So I was going to say, yeah, you've completed on the Wowo Gap acquisition. You're putting a team in place. So that is just about to get going. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, RMI had been sitting on it for the last year, kind of waiting for this deal to happen. Mm. Right? So to be fair, they hadn't done a lot of work. our plan is to immediately go upgrade the JORC. So this JORC is the old standard. And this is the same thing we did at Mombare back in the day. This is the, going from the 2004 standard, I believe it was, to the 2012 standard. It's a bit of a desktop exercise. It doesn't require you to go drill or anything like that. There is some risk that the resource changes, that the grade, you know, sometimes the grade goes up and the and the actual total resource goes down. In the case of Mombare, it didn't change at all. So it really varies a little bit, but that's the plan, is to go get that done. And then beyond that, we're going to follow the Mombare playbook, which is to try to get the cheapest, most reasonable mining lease we can. That gives you a 20-year right to go ahead and mine the project. Mm-hmm. And then as we do that, it's really about tying these assets together in a logical way and potentially trying to produce, you know, probably first from one and then ultimately from both. Mm. I think, as you said earlier, you know, we have firsthand accounts that there are groups in Asia, for example, who are desperate for these materials. They were killed during COVID. They couldn't get access to the raw materials. Mm. And many of them had to do very bad commercial transactions in order to stay afloat. You know, meaning, you know, they might have to pay their end users who would provide the raw material and for them to take kind of a minor profit at best. So if you can imagine, if you're in that battery supply chain, you're not going to let that happen again. What are you going to do? You're going to go out and seek the raw materials.
Yeah.
And what are we offering? Two really sizable assets in a fairly unique part of the world that I think is a nice balance away from the Philippines and Indonesia, which is where a lot of the existing nickel projects come from. So I think PNG offers a sort of third branch there with different politics. I mean, it has its own issues, of course, but I think given what we've seen in the Philippines with the environmental side and then the Indonesians with blocking exports, it might make a lot of sense to have exports from PNG if I was an Asian, you know, manufacturer of batteries or battery materials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, these are elephant scale deposits. I mean, they're not like, you know, tiny deposits. I think from memory, you've only maybe scratch 5% of the license.
Yeah, on Mombare 3, I think it is on the primary target. Yeah, no, I mean, these things, size is never the issue with these. That's just sort of the nature of these projects. We don't see much point in drilling them out any further.
Yeah. Because
we won't get any more credit for it, frankly. And I don't think off-takers need it. Our play is what I outlined. It's to take them from the exploration stage to the mining lease stage to do a DSO operation on one and then potentially both, potentially jointly at some point. And at that point, I think we have an opportunity to transact. Once the mining lease is in place, we could exit or partially exit, or we could go ahead and try to put the money together to build them out. I mean, the CapEx on these things is not crazy. So we're not talking about billion-dollar plants here. We're talking about cheap and cheerful DSO operations, you know, where you dig it up, you dry it out, and you ship it off to Asia. I don't want to understate. I mean, there's some complexity and roads and other things around it, but nothing like trying to put together a $1 billion nickel processing plant, right? So it's a different
app. DSO means what, Scott?
Sorry, that's direct shipping ore. So that is again where you extract and export without putting the very expensive plant up to concentrate the nickel into into a smaller form a more concentrated form before you export it.
And Mombare is ready to go in that regard.
Mombare is, as I said at the beginning, we haven't announced anything because frankly, we haven't gotten anything in writing. But if you go to the website of the PNG Mining Cadastre says application MAC matter. And what that means is it's been passed to the Mining Advisory Council. They are the last step. Okay. So in a sense, we appeared to be very close. But all I'm doing is the same thing any investor can do, which is go to the website, check it out. Mm-hmm. You know, we will, of course, announce through official channels as soon as we know something formal. We're reading the website, same as everybody else.
Okay. And then really at that point there, it's about, I mean, building the mine or partnering with someone and getting the
Well, that's what I was saying. Yeah, no, once the Mining Advisory Council approves it, then we have a 20-year right to produce. And at that point, I think we are going to go explore options to both transact. I mean, possibly you bring somebody in at that point. Like I said, partial exit, whatever, it might make sense, full exit. Or you just get on and try to build the mine, which again, in this case, is a very simple, non-CapEx heavy type investment. Mm. I mean, the estimated cost would be sort of in the, you know, I'd say $30 to $35 million.
Okay.
And obviously you would do that at the project level, not at the, you know, sort of core cell level necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Cool.
Yep. And just to throw a curveball in as well, I mean, I know you guys have got a vanadium project as well. And I think vanadium's pretty misunderstood in the market because this gets part to play in the battery market as well. So it has with these redox flow batteries, which are correct, more kind of industrial kind of scale units that you would maybe get for a, you know, I think in Australia they've been trying it in some of these small, you know, villages out in the outback that maybe only got 100, you know, houses or something like that, and you can have one of these redox flow units basically powering all the houses. Vanadium's fascinating. I mean, I was reading the other day that, you know, after 25 years, you know, everything else in that unit will probably be being replaced, but you can take the vanadium out and it's still got the exact same properties as it had 25 years previously, and it can be reused.
Yeah, that's exactly my understanding, that these things, A, they last forever to begin with, and even when you do need to sort of rejuvenate them, the actual vanadium could be pulled out and reused. It's really quite elegant in many ways.
Yeah. And you guys, the project's in Canada for the vanadium, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It's up in the Yukon. So we ultimately had been looked at doing another field season, possibly with some drilling this year. But I have to say, weirdly, or maybe not, COVID has been a real problem up there. I mean, getting a team out there to the Yukon was a real issue. And so we ultimately, as is now obvious, I guess, passed on doing anything this year. But I think that, you know, we're certainly interested in sending a team out there, hopefully post-COVID, really next summer, to go ahead and drill that asset out, because the results we had from the year before were very promising. I mean, it really looks very consistent. The grade looks decent. It's right alongside a major highway. And, you know, we're really kind of excited to do that. But we were a little limited, the summer before. We actually were only able to get the team out there for about 10 days. And again, the COVID restrictions were significant. It was really just a nightmare to try to get people out there that first summer. And this last summer, we just took a view that we couldn't get a proper drill program done. And so, you know, once you're talking about mobilizing and paying all that cost, it didn't make sense. So we haven't advanced it this last summer, but I agree with you. I mean, we think it's a very exciting project. It's at that very early kind of very attractive stage where a little bit of spending can actually make a huge difference in valuations and uplift. So we're currently, you know, working on that over the winter, and we would expect to have some views on how to take that forward here in the spring.
All right, excellent. All right, well, let's move into the UK then. Mm-hmm. We'll just go through the whole Courseulles portfolio. Yeah. Obviously, we've got the Pika plants, but there seems to be, I've seen that there was some press speculation, I think it was a couple of months ago, that these guys may be potentially offloading these at some point.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of a translation error, really. I mean, the Peakers were our chance to get into some late stage assets while we work on an earlier, you know, portfolio or pipeline of yeah. assets. And so these were pretty late stage. We bought into them for, again, very little, because frankly, Peakers were out of favor this spring and this summer. But if anybody's paid any attention to the UK energy crisis over the last couple of months, it turned out to have been an outstanding move. I mean, peaking has gone from sort of like, we don't want to touch your fossil fuels, to how many can we turn on and how can we get into it? And oh my God, look at the returns these things are doing. So, you know, I'm not going to say it was all that we anticipated that, but I think we always saw them as a transitional energy asset. And obviously the UK energy market is really helping us here. So, you know, it wasn't obvious to go into Peakers. We, you know, Courseulles is sort of situated as a battery play, right? So we had to sort of ask the question, do we want to get into something not battery related? But I think it's really kind of shifted in front of our eyes. And, you know, I think everybody now recognizes that Peakers are in demand and really the key to UK energy security and the sort of decarbonization transition. So yes, we've picked up rights to two 50 megawatt Peakers. We have 40% of one and 100% of the other. And as the press speculated, we are looking to fund them. And so in a sense, that's an exit, I guess. I mean, we would expect to end up with a fairly sizable development fee. That would probably be a reasonable chunk of our current market cap. An ongoing carry in these projects. And so we would not exit completely, but we would have an ongoing, you know, access to those revenue streams. But these are big tickets here. I mean, this would be the biggest thing Courseulles has ever done easily. And I have to say, I'm pretty bullish on it at the moment. I mean, it took a little while to get going. As I mentioned, this summer, we had a lot of no's, not interested in fossil fuels. And at the moment, and as the press has correctly identified, we are in talks with a number of mostly continental-based infrastructure funds who now see the logic. And I think now they can sort of understand and tolerate, frankly, getting into fossil fuels at this point. I mean, I would also point out that these sorts of sites can be converted to hydrogen at some point. So in a sense, you're buying the grid connection and the ability to potentially convert them at some point down the line. So we're very excited. It's been a bit of work to get all this ready. We've put what I think is a grade A investor deck together, and we have had a lot of meetings, and we are now kind of getting to those fairly advanced stages here where we would hope to be able to announce something in the near term, that we have gone ahead and completed that funding process for these two projects. And as I said earlier, you know, these are both 50 megawatt projects. The total CapEx will be in the mid 50 million range. I mean, it'll be massive for a little company like us. And yeah. I think we'll legitimize the flexible grid solutions thesis and why we put it together to begin with. So, you know, we're not quite there yet, and obviously follow the RNSs to sort of track that. But I think the press kind of leaked it a little bit early that things are looking good and going the right direction.
Yeah, and just probably there's probably people listening to this now saying, what the hell is a peaker plant? What is Scott talking about? It may be worth giving us 30 seconds masterclass.
Of course. I mean, traditionally, these are the plants that turned on during kind of rush hour in the morning and when everybody turns on their ovens at night. That's why they're called peaker plants, right? They are sort of peak assets. But more recently, what they really do is they smooth renewables, right? So we don't have so much of an issue with everybody cooking dinner at the same time anymore. What we have issues with is what's happened here in the UK over the last couple of months are massive periods of the wind not blowing. Right. I mean, if the wind doesn't blow for 2 days and renewables are 40-50% of production, we've got major problems. And so that's where these gas peakers fit in. Batteries, which everybody loves and loves to love, the longest duration battery in the UK that I am aware of is in the sort of 1.5 to 2 hour range, meaning that the battery can work for 2 hours and then it's finished, you know, much like your phone and needs to be recharged. Right. Mm-hmm. Gas peakers can run pretty much indefinitely. I mean, so, you know, they aren't carbon baseload, which nobody really wants to build. They're not the big gas plants. They're not coal, obviously, much cleaner than all those things. They're very efficient, but they turn on when they're needed. And so if the UK wants wind and solar, which I think we all do, then we're going to have these sort of backup options. You know, and there are other things out there like modular nuclear and other things we've seen kind of be in the news of late. I think that those all have their place. But realistically, the UK is not weaning itself off gas anytime soon. And if we want to sort of have an electric life, whether that's car, home, everything else, then we're going to, you know, we all want the power to turn on when we hit the switch, right? And we're going to need these kind of peaking assets to smooth renewable generation.
Yeah, so it's basically a plan B for the infrastructure of the UK or the energy infrastructure of the UK.
And practically what they are really is just a bunch of gas generators. They're sort of little gas. They're sort of almost like marine engines like you see on ships that run on natural gas. You line up 20 of them at a site. You hook it up to the grid. And you don't even need any people on site. They get sort of run remotely. The guys that we hire to trade them turn them on when they're required. And frankly, in the last couple of months, they've been killing it. I mean, absolutely, as nobody is surprised. I mean, these things make money, not on prices, but on volatility. And we all know that there's been massive volatility in the system with the French interconnect down and the UK power prices going bonkers. So these assets have been killing it. And again, you know, it obviously helps our investment case, you know, when we're off talking to infra funds and we can point to, well, look at what they made, you know, over the last couple of months. You know, we joke, you know, the 1 in 10 year events are starting to happen every quarter in the UK, right? So that these are the assets and batteries, but these in particular will benefit from that volatility.
So where are we on the journey then, Scott? You say they're killing it, in your words. Do you have like planning commission in place already? Is that right for one of these? And where are you on the sort of timeline of getting them online?
There's two of them. One is in Aylesbury and one is out in Bristol. They are shovel ready, which is why we are out doing the funding. So no, what we are doing at the moment is conducting a beauty pageant among, as I said, these big infrastructure funds to go ahead and write the check to build them out. And the build on these is not a long time. It's sort of 12 months, something like that. Mm. But before you build, obviously, you got to get your finance lined up. And this is much too big for Corso in its current size. So we have brought in these infrastructure funds to go ahead and potentially write those checks.
So it's already the sort of beauty parade, trying to get the funds effectively to go ahead and proceed.
If all goes to plan, the next announcement should be that XYZ fund from, you know, obviously I can't mention any names, has committed to funding these two peakers. Hopefully, you know, we'd love to do it before Christmas. I mean, it could be next year, you know, whatever. But it's an active process. That's what I can say.
Right? Okay.
And whenever we announce that, then Corsell would be effectively announcing probably a pretty sizable development fee, as well as the carry that I mentioned. So direct to us would be an ongoing revenue stream in those projects, as well as, you know, taking hopefully a decent chunk of money off the table. I mean, this is all for final negotiation, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when you negotiate with these funds, some may say, well, we don't really want you to take cash. We want to give you a bigger stake. Or other ones may say, we don't actually want you to have a big stake. We want the whole thing, but we'll give you more cash up front. You know, this is a negotiation. We have to have that. So no, they're ready to go. I mean, it's not to say there isn't work left to do, but as for the projects themselves, that's why we got into them. As I said earlier, they were advanced stage. So our plan with FGS has always been to develop our own things, but to cut that process short by getting into a couple of late stage things, just to get going, right? Because FGS in a sense was new and had to be jumpstarted. So we've got an earlier stage portfolio of both batteries and peakers that we are working on behind the scenes that I'm not going to be able to say too much about, and we're certainly not going to announce until they're ready. But I can sort of, that we've said it private or publicly before, that we are, you know, that this pipeline exists and we are continuing to develop it. But the big ones then that are ready to go is the Burwell the Burwell Battery and the Avonmouth entering road gas.
Entering peak. Road,
those,
yeah.
Those are the three that we sort of, you know, that allowed us to jump the queue, if you might say.
Yeah, so get these two or three online quickly, and that helps to generate some revenue, and then develop your own things from scratch and take them full ownership, possibly.
Yeah, or maybe a larger ownership. Exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
From if you look at what we've paid to get into these peakers and what we would want to take out, I mean, even as a developer, even if you held none of the ongoing rights to the project, it's vastly accretive to our business, right? Mm. So I think, I mean, the strategy of having a very small team here developing these assets, getting them funded, and then being rewarded for getting them funded, it makes total financial sense from our point of view, irrespective of how much we ultimately own. So I would hope, and that's, you know, if anybody looked at that RNS and said, oh, they're looking to offload, that's not the right way to look at it, is my point. We're not going to, you know, raise 56 million pounds at the Corcel level right now. So we're not going to be 100% owners of these things, but that's okay, is my point. We're going to be rewarded for having taken them to that.
Yeah,
point.
Exactly. And you expect that fairly soon. I know it says on the website there, financial close end of 2021, but it might slip a bit into 2022, but you're fairly advanced, fairly confident it'll happen fairly soon, let's say.
Yeah, I don't think, the plan is to get it done as soon as possible. It'd be great to announce something before Christmas. You know, if it slips, it slips. Obviously, we have a couple of weeks left there. But broadly speaking, you know, again, this is all public information. It has leaked that we're in these sort of mid to late stage discussions. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a matter of, you know, which horse is going to win and how quickly we can get it across the line. I mean, it's sort of a typical negotiation. I mean, some of these groups know the UK really well and they can move quicker. Some need to be educated a bit on the UK, but they like the idea. You know what I mean? So, you know, all these groups are going to want to talk to consultancies here and confirm my financial model, confirm our assumptions. You know, I mean, it's a process, right? I mean, this is a lot of money. I mean, we're talking 50, 60 million pounds here, right? So you know, they're not going to write those checks without having done their DD. And that means sort of pulling up the sheet and looking into, you know, making sure that the leases are in place, making sure the grid connections are in place. You know, there's just a fair amount of work there. It's not a 10-minute conversation in a conference room or something like that. It's an ongoing process to get that done.
And have you done any kind of sort of forecasting as well in terms of what you might expect, or maybe you can't disclose it now, or what's the deal with kind of expected, let's say, revenue?
Yeah, no, the peakers would be expected to throw off a couple million a year. I think if we have more years like the last couple of months, those numbers start to go north pretty quickly. The numbers we've used, I want to say, for the peakers would be about 82,000 per megawatt. I think that's the sort of average number we're using. But the reality is, per megawatt, these types of assets have been doing well in excess of that over the last couple of months, at least during periods. I mean, again, they don't run all the time. So it's not so much, you know, if they run for 30 minutes, but it's so bonkers lucrative, that can make your whole year, right? So so it's just the sort of the nature of the assets.
So 80 to 1,000 per megawatt hour.
No, 82,000. Sorry,
82,000.
82K per megawatt. So that gives you, broadly speaking, you know, what you might expect revenue-wise in an asset like this, you know, over a 20-year period. But if you think vol is going to be higher, then you might go higher up that range. I mean, our sort of rough broad range at the moment is probably 72 to 92 is probably our range. So, you know, our base case is kind of 80, as makes sense. But again, I can show you some periods recently where, you know, renewables have actually made these numbers much higher than that. Mm. So, you know, that's to some extent what these investors have to wrap their head around. They have to take their own view. You know, is 82 reasonable? Is 98 more reasonable? You know, where do we want to be on that? And it's interesting. We originally were looking to put debt and equity into these things at the beginning, and we've now kind of changed our tune. I think we're trying to really to raise all of it in equity at the beginning, and then lever the project up in year two after it's built. And I think doing that, A, it'll be easier to close this year or next year. It'll be a quicker process, and B, you know, the numbers support it and probably support more leverage if you do it later. So I think that's just a little detail, but it's, you know, originally we were trying to actually put the debt and the equity into these SPVs now. And I think, you know, we're talking to groups that can actually write the whole check immediately. So why mess with the debt kind of for construction and then go ahead and lever it up, you know, 65, 75%, you know, whatever's possible in year two, once it's built at a nice low interest rate as should be possible.
So I suppose, is it quite hard though to forecast what might come in? Because as you say, it's so volatile, you might have to, you know, see how it goes for a year or two, and then you can sort of, you know, suggest an average maybe. Is that the case?
Well, a lot of these assets with the peakers in particular are backed by the capacity market, which is effectively a government subsidy of sorts, okay, where they pay you to not do anything. Right, yeah. I mean, in theory, you may have to turn on, but it actually never happens. So no, I mean, when you're talking about debt, you're going to say, well, we're backed by capacity market payments, mm, and then we expect to make X on top of that. And capacity market, you know, over the 15-year period, I think last year was sort of in the 18 to 20 range, but on a 1 year, so I don't want to get too much into the weeds on the, how the capacity market works. So they have long-term contracts and short-term contracts, and short-term contracts have been up in the 40s. So if I'm talking to you about sort of an annual, let's call it 80K, 82K per megawatt per year, and half of that is backed by the government and you don't actually have to do anything. Mm. that's the thesis. That's what we're actually offering to investors. We're saying, look, this is basically risk-free for, it's usually 15 years. Okay. You know, and at that point, maybe the site gets converted to hydrogen, as I said earlier. I mean, if the hydrogen, mm-hmm, economy has really moved on, these sites, actually these engines can already run on partial hydrogen, even from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be a great advance to go ahead and shift them. So these are really the ideal transitional energy assets.
But either way, though, it's transformational to Corcel as a business when they go online.
I mean, obviously, if Corcel, I mean, we're not quite there yet. Follow the RNSs. But if Corcel were to announce that we have raised 55 million pounds for two large energy projects that we're now going to go be built, and our partner was XYZ Infrastructure Fund from the continent, I mean, you tell me how that's going to read. Yeah. I'm pretty excited about it, as you can probably tell.
Exactly.
Obviously, I would like to get it done, and you know, we don't count our chickens at all.
No.
Yeah. Let's wait till these markets improve, Scott. Though sometimes it doesn't matter how bad the markets are. If you've got the right news.
Well, and we have to get on with it, right? I mean, we run a company. Like, we've promised to do what we're going to do, and we're going to get, I mean, we, you know, trust me, if the deal's done, it has to be announced, right?
Yeah.
So I'd love to like enter the hottest bull market of the world and time everything and all the rest. But this is taking a little longer than we expected to begin with, you know, and I've explained some of the nuances around getting some of these guys across the line. Mm. But when it, you know, if and when it hits, it will be huge for us.
Yeah.
I think the credibility, I mean, you think about the credibility for a relatively small company to have put those two together, taken two assets off the shelf and gotten them funded and on their way to being built.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
huge.
Good. And Burwell, then, is it the same with Burwell? Is that ready to sort of?
Yeah, that's a little more complicated. I know a lot of our shareholders have been frustrated. That's taken, you know, again, longer than we thought. Our entry cost there, again, was nominal. It was 100 grand or something like that. I mean, we basically paid nothing. And why do you pay nothing to go into a battery? Because it's not ready, right? I mean, because there are things and risks that remain. And so the risk that reared its ugly head was the land or the lease. And ultimately, we sat across the table from our counterparty. They said they were willing to sign a lease a year ago this month, and they then didn't for 8 months, right? So it just sort of was what it was. I mean, there's nothing we can do. And that is just the nature of these projects. It is why we got into them, or into this one, for almost nothing. You know, it's the nature of the beast. So frustrating, but still, batteries are super hot. It's a great place to be. The land was sold over the last couple of months to another developer, a developer, funny enough, who has some interests in battery development. So it's a real estate group, but they do some work in the sort of battery development space. So a nice counterparty. And just when we thought, okay, we're ready to go and get this project moving, you know, we were notified effectively that there may be an issue with the grid, which we announced a couple of weeks ago, effectively. And this, you know, this is an interesting point because it affects almost every project across the UK. The UK grid is becoming massively overloaded very quickly, and part of it is all these little distributed energy products like we've been talking about today. You know, if you build a nuclear station, right, you build massive infrastructure. When you try to connect into your network substation, you start to overload it pretty quickly. Your neighborhood substation. So, you know, what happened here is we found out that the grid might need some upgrades in that area. And we don't know who's going to pay it. We don't know how much it's going to cost. And we don't know exactly when it's going to be resolved. So unfortunately, that's just become an issue. And it really means that, you know, you can't take a project forward if you don't know when you can hook your grid up, right? So we've just been able to put it on hold. Mm. We've reached out to UKPN, who is the DNO on this case. They're the ones that sort of manage the grid connection process, and they have absolved us from making any payments. So in a sense, we can sort of put it on ice for a little bit. And I know that doesn't make everybody happy. And I think there's a little bit of a simplistic idea that, you know, all you guys got to do is fill out some forms and wait and it's done. But I mean, these are complicated multi-stage projects with an awful lot of different moving parts in it. And when you see a company like Corcel get into it, like I said, for nominal cost, that's because it's not finished. Mm. And there's risk around taking it to that final point. So, you know, is there any way we could have anticipated that the grid would be jammed? I mean, absolutely not. I mean, these are ongoing issues where the grid kind of gives you feedback over time and eventually says, you know, hey, we may have to do some upgrades and we may pay for some of it or somebody else may pay for some, you know, it's just not clear. Right. So that, unfortunately, that's kind of where we're at on that. And you know, like I said, we have announced all this. But we still think it's a good project. We like our new partner, our potential partner here on the leasing side. So I think the land situation has been resolved. And now we're waiting in the same manner that many other projects are. We are waiting for clarity around the substation upgrade works that may or may not be required. And I had to say that this is that, you know, if you go talk to a bunch of mostly private developers in this space, they're going to say they're running into this project everywhere. Okay. It's one of the issues of what we talked about as we go from big baseload stations to all these rather smaller, distributed energy production assets. Substations around the UK just get filled up. They just cannot necessarily accommodate all these new connections. Mm-hmm. And so somebody's going to have to pay those bills. And I mean, the general view is that the government and National Grid are probably going to step in and sort some of that out, because you're not going to be able to offload all those costs on the projects, right? They won't be economic, clearly. So no, I mean, grid connections are becoming very, very, very valuable at this point. And we have one, but it just kind of shows the point that you can have a grid connection offer, but until you get to the sort of final stage where the National Grid kind of says, okay, you're kind of clear to go ahead and connect, that, you know, they're allowed to go ahead and throw you curveballs, basically, which is a little bit what's happened here.
Okay. So you're just waiting really a little bit longer, perhaps.
Yeah, that's the idea. I mean, hopefully it resolves in the near term. I just don't know. Okay. But, we've been trying to focus people, obviously, on the other things we're doing. There are a lot of shareholders who really keyed on this project. I mean, it would have been great, obviously, if we had sort of taken it to shovel ready and funded it during the same time as the peakers. Mm. But these are all 50 megawatt projects. I mean, they're all broadly equivalent, right? I mean, there's nothing that says one or the other is better or worse. Mm. I think it just demonstrates some of the risks of these sorts of things. I mean, as I said earlier, when you get into a project that are relatively early stage, you're paying very little because there are ongoing material risks around taking it, you know, all the way forward. We think it's still valid. We think this project will be a battery someday. And we are, you know, we've been able to offload any further costs while we, you know, go ahead and wait for some of this congestion issues to work themselves out.
Okay. Excellent. Well, thank you. That certainly brought me up to speed with Corcel. I understand a lot more what's going on in the business. And as we said at the start, you're certainly in the right place at the right time. And it sounds like things might be about to start getting exciting, maybe.
I think so. I mean, like I said, we've laid out a strategy. We've laid out what we want to expose investors to, and we've executed on it. I mean, I think our success rate has actually been pretty good when you look across WoWo and these peakers coming in and some of the things that, you know, I've sort of talked about today where that looked to be forthcoming. So, you know, we think, as you say, right, it's a little bit of a cliche, but right place, right time. I think we're correct on that. And I think, you know, our view, and I think the board's view, is that these efforts will pan out and will be recognized by the broader market.
Mm. Kenny, do you have any final thoughts or questions?
No, it just sounds like there's a lot of paddling going on. Or I'm not going to say frantic paddling, but it looks very calm in the top. But there's obviously a lot of work going on in the background, and sometimes investors, they don't see it. So it's good for you to come on and you know, give us a bit of in-depth analysis of what's going on in each project, and you know, people understand it. And there's a lot of work to be done to get these beasts moving, but once they get moving, then the rewards can be fantastic.
Yeah, I think you got to provide some color, right? I mean, I think Corcel is it's a real company. We don't put RNSs out every 20 minutes just to do it, right? I mean, we lay out a strategy and we execute on it. And when we hit on these things, they're going to be very meaningful to our business. They're not going to be fluffy RNSs, right? So it's a certain kind of business. And I know investors, you know, some like companies that sort of RNS twice a day, right? I get that. And, you know, it's a certain sort of style to some extent. But I think we are really trying to increase our net asset value, because that's ultimately what's going to drive the share price, you know. And when it does go up, it's going to be underpinned by a portfolio of very real, very exciting assets. And I think, you know, hopefully that gives everybody some comfort that this is the right play.
Excellent. Perfect. Well, Scott, thank you very much for your time today. Always a pleasure, never a chore. And thank you very much for coming on the podcast. It's good to catch up. And of course, you're welcome back at any other time to keep us updated with what's going on in Corcel. But yeah, for now, thank you very much. And goodbye.
Thank you. Appreciate
Cheers.
It, guys.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.